We are celebrating summer by bringing you the top 10 40 Thrive episodes of all time. This week, number 10.
You're listening to the 40 Thrive podcast, the show created for women 40 and beyond, ready to shake things up. And now, your host, Jackie McDougall.
Welcome back to another episode of the 40 Thrive podcast. So let me ask you a question. What happens when you take a young girl, the daughter of hippie parents growing up in California wine country, a girl who has dreams of driving an 18-wheeler, and you give her an education, experience, and mentorship? What does she become? Well, I'm here to tell you, she becomes a direct, magnetic, fierce, and insatiably curious 40-plus broad, passionate about helping women succeed. That's who my guest is today. Dia Bondi is about to share with us how to ask for what we really want, but more importantly, how to get it. She's a communications coach, adrenaline junkie, and founder of Ask Like an Auctioneer, a program that uses a new model to help women make that bold and courageous ask for more. Dia's dropping some serious value in this episode, so I want to get right into it. But one thing I did learn from Dia is to ask for what you really want. And you know what? I want to know how I can best serve you through this podcast. That's right. I'm looking for feedback. Whether it's through our private 40 Thrive Facebook community, a review on Apple Podcasts, or you just want to email me at hello@40thrive.com. Let me know what's working for you, what you'd like more of. Heck, you can even share what you'd like less of. This podcast is not about me. It was created to help you kick things up a notch, whether it's in your career, finances, or overall wellness. I can only give you what you need if you share your feedback with me. All right, are you ready to get what you really want? Check out this combo with the powerful Dia Bondi. Dia, welcome to the 40 Thrive podcast.
I'm so happy to be here with you and your audience.
Not only are you going to basically teach us to get whatever the hell we want in our lives using your foolproof method, take us back to little Dia. Were you always this badass CEO?
I grew up in the Northern California wine country. My parents were sort of earthy, hippie, surfer types. When I was a kid, I always wanted to be a truck driver. You know, all my friends were like, I want to be a fireman. I want to be a nurse. I want to be a teacher. And I always wanted to be a truck driver. And I think looking back on that, it makes sense to me because I'm like, there's something about having my own big, shiny truck and being the only woman out on the open road that could handle an 18-wheeler, rolling into a truck stop and just like letting everyone's jaws drop at how hot and rogue and independent I was.
So you didn't become a truck driver. What did you do instead?
I've been self-employed since the beginning. You know, I've always been in the hustle zone. Instead of working on campus and college, I got a certification to teach group fitness. And I taught at, you know, 8 different clubs, 10 to 12, 15 classes a week all over the county where I worked. And because $50 an hour is better than at that time, $7 an hour. And I loved it that I didn't have to ask anybody for time off. I could just swap it out as I wanted to. Like I got to drive my 18-wheeler anywhere I wanted to go, basically. And then later, you know, through college and past, it just actually the world of fitness really informed a lot about what I care about and do now in my coaching practice, which is really about helping people really be embodied and bring themselves forward, fully like present to themselves. And finding ways to get to that through their physicality was what lit me up then. And now how I get to that is working with people in business, but still really aiming at how do I help folks I work with either in my communications coaching work or this ask project that we're talking about today? How do I help them be as embodied and present to what they want and step forward into it?
How did you shift from coaching people in that physical space into the more business side?
Honestly, how I made the jump is that I was unembarrassed about talking about what the hell I wanted to everybody in the world. And I didn't have a name for the thing I wanted to do, but I talked about the characteristics that I wanted in my professional life outside of fitness. You know, when I thought about my career, you know, the thing I put on a suit to go do where I felt legit. I was really unembarrassed about telling everybody about, I know, here's what I want. I don't know where that lives. And spent the next year really looking at like, how do I want to spend my time? And what impact do I want to have in that time? I didn't want to get on a corporate ladder and climb it for 15 years before I could do what I really wanted to do. I wanted it right now. So I spent the next year doing a lot of informational interviewing, like, and I learned about this thing that was called industrial psychology. And now what we think of as like learning and development or organizational development, where you're thinking about how human potential and the authentic self and professional development meets organizational goals, right? And I was like, this is amazing. This is like a fitness studio, but in business, you know, it's a fitness studio because you're going to get to look at who you are and how you're showing up and how to be present to yourself and working in a way that's aligned to who you are. That's what I imagined it was going to be, but I had no idea that there was a job out there for me. And I talked about it in all my classes, because the beauty of being a fitness instructor is you get to wear a mic for an hour every day. And I had people in my room that were, you know, 12 people in a class, 50 people in a class. And I'm sort of a closet, you know, stand-up comedian. So I used that microphone to tell everyone in my class, like, I was helping them with their lives and bodies and trying to enjoy movement and all that stuff. And I was like, here's what I'm after. So one day I was teaching spinning back when spinning was brand new. And a woman got off her bike and she came up to me and she said, hey, I'm an executive coach. And I went, what? She goes, yeah, I'm an executive coach. I went, okay, put a pin in that. That's a thing. She goes, yeah, I'm an executive coach for a guy who has a training organization who does sort of public speaking work. And he hasn't hired anybody for a really long time. And he's looking for somebody. I think you guys would be a great match. And so we sat down, had a conversation. He was so compelling to me. And I went to watch him teach a 3-day class. And at the end of those 3 days, I knew so deeply that I had to do this work. And the work was literally public speaking training, which seems so baseline for us now. But during that time, it was sort of a big deal to think about storytelling in a corporate context. It took me months to actually nail down a conversation with him to say, like, hey, I have never wanted something so deeply ever. You know, wow. Plus he worked all over the world. And I knew one of the things I wanted was that open road adventure. My 18 wheeler became 747 actually. And he worked all over the world. Boy, I was really out of my league, but I felt so clear that I could figure out how to be good at this. And B, that it was so aligned to who I was that I just wasn't going to not do it. I said, look, I want to do this and I need my big break, and either it's going to be you or it's going to be somebody else. So I like, will you teach me? Wow. And he said, yes. And it broke open a whole new world for me.
There are many of us who want to get into coaching. We want to make an impact in some way. And we try to figure out what that best way is. And then we feel like we have to do it on our own all the time. And so there are people out there who are further in the game than you are to learn from. 100%. And I think sometimes we forget that.
100%.
What would have happened if you just tried, oh, that's really compelling to me, I'm going to become that, and you never asked that guy for help? I don't doubt you would have gotten there. I just, not the same way.
And not the same way. And it was an accelerator, you know, to recognize that he had the thing that I wanted. I want to have the kind of impact you and the other folks in your organization are having. I want to help you realize your vision and be able to act on my values at the same time. I was at this place where I was so naive and ambitious at the same time that it was easier then, I think, for me to see who I could attach and how I could attach my wagon to somebody who's further down the road than I think it is for me to see now. Sometimes I forget, you know, I have so much more to learn, obviously, but it's easy for us to get caught in like, I should be able to just do that on my own.
Well, that's exactly right. Because 20 years ago, it's easy to say, I don't know all the things. I'm going to go find some people and learn some things. And now I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's ego. I don't know if it's fear. I don't know what the reason is, but I find over and over and over again, women over 40 who no longer ask. They no longer reach out and say, will you teach me? Will you help me? They just think, you know, and I'm obviously generalizing, but I speak to a lot of women over 40 every single day. And I see a lot of like, I should be able to do this on my own.
Right. Let me figure it out when nobody's looking. And then ta-da to the world.
Right. But it doesn't work that way many, many times. Sometimes it does. And sometimes, ta-da, it's great.
It's a combination, right? We have to do the work of like figuring out what it is that we need and then look outward to say, who has that thing? Who has that understanding, that capability, that competency, that inspiration, that the thing I'm working on? You match up the ask that you need with the work that you've done yourself, right?
Right.
That's the dance. Like, where am I now? What is this thing I'm trying to make happen in the world need? Who has that? And where do I go fetch it? What I've experienced is that, well, two things, my own life in the last couple of years, and also in this ask project that I'm doing, that dance, the world actually wants it, because it's wonderful to be able to help somebody in a meaningful way.
Absolutely. And how many times are we out there helping other people and taking care of things, but then we're like, oh, I couldn't possibly bother another person. But yet we have meaning or feel meaning doing that for other people.
100%.
So you're this badass coach. You're like teaching businesses and like high profile people, communication. You're doing the thing. And then you're like, I should go to auctioneering school. How did that happen?
So I have a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old. And years ago, we were part of a preschool co-op. And some of your listeners who are parents are familiar with what those are. All of the mommies and daddies in, you know, and caregivers in that community, you know, we did an annual fundraiser. And part of that is doing a live auction. And the fundraising committee said, hey, Dia, you're comfortable with the mic. Will you be our live auctioneer? And I was like, I don't know. I don't even know what that is. But okay. Like, it's really a mic and like 200 people looking at me. Fantastic. What shall I wear?
I'm in.
So we did it and it was a total blast. Like, I was ridiculous and it was a total blast, and we raised a lot of money and blah, blah, blah. And you know, that year I was sitting at dinner with some friends and we were all sort of talking about bucket list stuff. And I said, you know what I would do? Like, I would actually like be an auctioneer, like as a hobby gig. 9 years later, I'm sort of on a working sabbatical, meaning I kind of shut everything down for a little bit and needed to just spend time with myself again. I went through the artist's way. I did a bunch of obstacle course racing. I rode my bike to my office every day instead of driving, just slowed my life down for a chunk of time, took some projects, but really wanted to get things quiet for a minute. And in that, I knew that this is something that happens to me about every 7 years. Anyway, in that quiet time, I was like, okay, but in this, I want to learn something, and I want to something that isn't like, you know, not me reading my top 10 business books, but like, I wanted to do something weird. And my husband reminded me like, hey, remember that thing you said you wanted to do? And I was like, oh yeah. So I went to auctioneering school and went to St. Louis for 10 days at a Holiday Inn Express on the side of Route 66. Me and 100 cowboys, and did auctioneering school. And at auctioneering school, you learn about, you know, lifestyle auctioneering as well as real estate auctioneering and, you know, all that stuff. People are there for lots of reasons. But I think I was the only one who was there for this reason, which was, you know, I recognize that this is not going to be a new career. This is just going to be what I think of as an impact hobby. And I was like, okay, I know what I'm going to do with this. When I get home back to the Bay Area, I am going to use auctioneering. I'm going to focus on doing live auctioneering for fundraisers that went for nonprofits that are women-led and nonprofits that positively impact the lives of women and girls. Like, that's my lane. And it's been 3 years now and it's fantastic. I get to work with all kinds of nonprofits and make big, bold asks on behalf of these incredible missions that impact lives every day. It's my way of helping further their mission and grow my impact through their impact.
When you're in the middle of making these big asks, what are you discovering about life and those who are afraid to make asks, specifically women over 40?
So this thing hit me. It's fallen asleep one night and I was like, God, you know, all these women who are out there putting themselves on the line every day, making changes, making moves, gathering their courage and going out and making the requests of the world to help them action the thing they want to create. It would be so awesome. What would it be like if women just had a chance? Wouldn't it be cool if all women could kind of have this experience and then draw from what I'm learning here? Wouldn't it be great if all women could just ask like an auctioneer? And I was like, oh my God, I need to actually help women ask like an auctioneer. Why? Because of two core ideas. One is that when I work with women who are building a business or making a career move, and I'm asking the question, like, what is it that you're asking for in this moment that we need to build a story around to make that ask make sense? The answer that I often get is, what do you think I can get? Which means that we are designing calls to action for our businesses, for our dreams, for our aspirations, based on what we think we're going to get a yes to.
Right.
In auctioneering, we don't do that. We ask until we get a no. And once I get a no in the room, then I know for sure I have maximized the ask potential of that particular item that I'm auctioning. I always go for a no, and then I sell it for one increment less than what I had somebody shake their head at. Get that? So I aim for a no, and once I get a no, I know, oop, I'm right in the zone of maximizing the potential of that ask. But what we do too often is instead, in business, ask, what do I think I can get? Which means I'm aiming for a yes. Maybe I get a yes right away, but the problem is, if we get an immediate yes to what we're asking for, that tells me that I didn't actually maximize the potential of that ask. I left something on the table. And that something could be money. It could also be opportunity, connection, you know, lots of things.
And we don't know how much that we've left on the table, whether it was one increment or 100 increments.
Yeah. And let me tell you, often it's more than one increment. Like, since I've been doing this work, women are freaking themselves out at what they're getting. So we aim to get a yes when auctioneers aim to get a no. So what if we aim to get a no? Why don't we do that? We don't do that because of something I call the zone of freaking out. We design an ask that feels courageous, but we pretty much know we're going to get a yes to. Somehow that feels like a stretch, but we're like, great, I can do it. When I start challenging women's ideas about what they might ask for and start getting closer to what they think they're going to get a no to, they talk about embodied. They get super embodied and super present to how freaky that is. And that tells me they're in their zone of freaking out. And that zone of freaking out sends you the message of like, no, no, don't go there. You're going to be rejected. No, no, that's too crazy. No, no, how dare you? No, no, who do you think you are? No, no, pick a phrase. We all have our own, right? So these two ideas of like, I want women to aim for a no and then negotiate down to a mutually agreeable yes. And so they know for sure they've maximized the potential of that ask in collaboration with their askee, extracted the maximum value for that ask. And I want women to not expect themselves to be comfortable with it, to read that freak out feeling you get with like, how dare I ask for that? Maybe you have coaches in your listening community who are like, I've been coaching for $60 an hour for years and I got to make a change. It's unsustainable for me. And they want to go up into the, you know, 150, 250 an hour range. And boy, but all those numbers up there that they really want are actually in their zone of freaking out. So when they go to make that ask, they're going to get that feeling in their body that tells them I'm doing something wrong. They'll never go for it.
All right, I'm going to fess up right here, Dia. Like, how many women are negotiating with themselves? I recently started working with a client and let her know how much it was. And then I immediately gave her a discount. And I was like, oh my gosh, I would actually slap around one of my clients who did that. Like, why would I have done that?
It's so funny you say that, because in auctioneering, that can happen. So in auction, you know, and everything that I'm teaching in my in this new project, I just, when I get a question from a woman, I'm like, huh, what do I do in auctioneering? That is like a framework that we can leverage that helps make sense and creates an action around this stuck point. So there's a thing that often happens in auctioneering that, you know, I have a joke for, which is, you know, somebody will raise their paddle to buy something, and then they have somebody else raise the paddle to compete with that price. And then the first person raises their paddle again, and then nobody raises it, but I asked for another increment above what that person has their paddle raised at, and they'll raise it again at that same paddle, essentially competing against themselves, like bidding against themselves. So yes, what you're talking about is the opposite of that, though, where we're actually lowering the price against ourselves.
Right.
And I see that there's something, God, there's so much here I want to talk about, but there is something about us tolerating our power.
Tell me more about that.
When I work with women to design the asks that are going to make big differences in their career, because usually women who come either to my workshop or book coaching sessions with me are women who are like on the brink of having to use asking as a success strategy, or they have a big negotiation moment coming up for them or an ask they want to make, that like just to say what they really want out loud and then shut up and then feel how powerful that is and tolerate that power is like a thing.
We're so quick to fill the air with our voice.
To step on our own jokes. Yes. when I think about women over 40, you know, getting ready for talking to you today, I had a few ideas about sort of where I've been seeing this last year, the themes with talking to women who are over 40 versus talking to women in their maybe 20s. What I've noticed is that, you know, women over 40 are less, they call me less for a level up and more because they're in the middle of a big change. They're okay. Like, great, been doing that for 20 years. I want to do something different now. They're in a change state. And that might not be true for all of you who are listening now, but like, it's a trend I'm noticing. They're in a change state, not a level up in my existing path state.
Yes. I see it all the time.
Starting something new, making a 180 in their career, stepping back into the career after the kids are gone. There's a 180 feeling about it. It's big. Earlier this year, a woman booked with me who a coaching session, and she was exactly that in the middle of a big pivot. She was had been a lighting engineer at an architecture firm for 10 years. You know, kiddos are kind of like up and doing their high school thing. And she had a vision for herself to step out of that world and to build a career in real estate in her community. Totally different deal. She's going from like, you know, engineering to like something highly relationship focused. Right. And she was really passionate about helping families find the right home in their community. And she thought of it as like a way to impact folks, not just transactions. Right. And you know what, even if it's a way to make the kinds of transactions that bring you the money that you envision for yourself, I'm like, go girl. Not everything, you know, there's this assumption already that like always that women doing work are always like taking care of the planet or, you know, taking care of the world. It's all charity work. And no, it is not. Like, I'm so happy to help women pursue the thing that they want to pursue, whether it's, you know, in the space of impact or not.
Well, exactly that. And I just want to stop for a half a second, because for some reason, there's this belief that if you're making an impact, you have to be broke and living paycheck to paycheck. It's okay to work and to make an impact and to really love what you do and make boatloads of money.
100%. 100%.
But yet we convince ourselves that it's one or the other.
Well, there is, you know, women, we fulfill the sort of caretaking of the universe role, right? So there's also an assumption often that women who are out and working with women is also a nonprofit venture. I interviewed a bunch of coaches last year for myself, actually, and one of them was a gentleman who was lovely. And I asked him at the end of our discovery call, so is this kind of work that I'm working on, you know, interesting to you? Do you want to help me, you know, fulfill this vision? And he said, oh yeah, I really love working with, you know, nonprofits and such. And I was like, oh no, honey, there ain't nothing nonprofit about what I'm trying to do. Like, I was like, just because I'm working with women in a positive impact way does not mean that it's like, excuse me. You know, it's very interesting how it gets bucketed that way easily.
Yeah. And men see it that way. Like, oh, if you're doing that, you must be making no money because you're just sweet.
Exactly. You know? So interesting. Yeah. So this woman called me. She said, I'm in the middle of this change. And her ask was, I want to renegotiate my status, my employment status with my employer in this architecture firm. She's like, I want to go to halftime, but I want to basically double my rate. I want to, because I want to start building my real estate thing, but I can't go cold turkey because I need the money, you know,
right.
It's like, yep. I'm going to buy my own health insurance. Fine. I can do it if these other things are, you know, in place.
Right.
She was just shaking in her boots. I mean, shaking in her boots. And the conversation that we had started with, okay, what is it that you want? I want to go, you know, for halftime. Great. I said, how much money? She said, you know, X $100 of an hour. Fine. That's what you want. Fantastic. And then I was like, for how long? She was like, I don't know. I was like, but for how long? It's 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year. She said, 6 months. I said, great. So what would have them say yes to this? And we ended up unpacking like how much inside of her ask that she thought they would never go for, she had to offer. What she was bringing to the table was an opportunity, like if they want to keep her on. I mean, we play with a million scenarios. She's gonna go 50% time for 6 months, and then she's gonna go 20% time for another 2 months while she takes responsibility for onboarding her replacement and training her replacement, so they don't have to worry about doing that cold turkey for themselves. Like, you know, that she would be on demand for 3 months after that for, you know, 5 hours a week to troubleshoot with a new hire that would replace her. Like, we, you know, there was a million things that she had to offer them that would make them say yes to $500 an hour, 20 hours a week, an easier yes. And right. This is the stuff that I mean, that like inside we make an ask, but inside of that ask is the thing that the person that you're asking gets. That is the offer half of our right. ask.
Right.
And we often underestimate the power of that. We forget we even have it. And when we start taking inventory of it, all of a sudden it helps embolden our asks in a way that makes them easier to make.
I know that you work with women in business. And so there's usually, you know, a financial aspect to each of these asks. But do you find yourself giving advice to women specifically over 40, maybe, and it has nothing to do with financial ask? Like, I'm trying to think of a couple things I want to ask my husband and how you can help me.
Well, here's an example. So I'm a professional development partner with Latinas in Tech here in the Bay Area. I did a workshop recently, and I have a 2-hour workshop called Your Most Powerful Ask Live. And a component of that is live coaching. So we go through the core concepts and ask like an auctioneer and then bring people up front and we do some coaching. And one woman, maybe this is resonant for women, you know, in your community, in your listening community right now that are on the verge of starting something new. This woman was on staff somewhere, but also an entrepreneur. She was just going to go start asking for money. Mm-hmm. And the ask that was most relevant to her business right now didn't actually have to do with money. It had to do with mentorship and advice. So we, in our conversation, we recognize that like, oh, the thing that she needs to ask for before she can go ask for money is like, who are my five, put together basically my advisory panel and ask people, don't ask the people that are the easy asks. Step into your zone of freaking out and ask the people that have a really high potential to say, no, not you. I ain't got no time. But also the people that if they said yes, would have an enormous impact on the success of your entrepreneurial journey because they're highly networked. You're, you know, in the right with the right circles. They are, you have relationships with the right investment capital groups that are aligned to the projects that you're doing. Like, right. Like those high stakes people, those people that feel high stakes for what you're trying to work on. So, and it felt like a Zofo ask for her to go, oh my God, I could never ask that person to do right. X, Y, and Z. So we had to get really clear of not just who's the ask, but what is the ask? What are you asking of them? Advice? Well, how much advice? How often? What's the commitment? And then what are the increments inside of that? Maybe you want to meet with them. You want to have an hour Zoom call every month for the next 3 months to do X, Y, and Z. Plus you want to be invited into these other small circles that you don't have another access point into them. Plus you want to blah, blah, blah. But all of those are components that you can add more of or let go of in the ask to get to the right yes that maximizes the potential of that ask and still works with the person that you're asking.
I think we are all asking for things in our lives every day, maybe not even aware of it. And we're not being direct. We're not being specific in our ask. And that even I love clear communication. I think that's why the first time I jumped on a call with you, I was like, oh, I love talking to this woman. She just like tells it like she sees it, you know, and just I know exactly what I'm getting from my conversation with you because you don't pull any punches. I love it. But like, for example, one of my kids walked over. This happened just last night. I baked cookies, which don't kid yourselves. That does not happen often. But I baked cookies.
Good job, mommy. Good job.
And thank you. And the child came over and I'm trying not to out which one and said like, oh, yeah, those cookies, they were good. I definitely liked those cookies. And I'm like, great. I'm glad. I'm so glad. And I totally knew where we were going, but I just ignore it. And then finally, mom, can I have another cookie? Sure. Yes. Go ahead and take it. Because I am so like passive behavior. I don't know what it is. It's like, to me, like I love direct communication. And so when I get direct communication from the kids or maybe somebody else in my life, I definitely like to say, thank you for just asking me directly so I know what it is that you want.
Yes. So this was the second point that I was thinking about this morning is that one thing that I often see women suffer with, it would really give us a boost, is to be as specific as possible. We're often not specific enough. You know, in auctioneering, I'm saying I'm looking for $1,250. Anyone in at $1,250? And then I'm saying very specifically, I'm looking for $1,500. Anyone at $1,500? And I don't get anybody there. I'm going to go, I'm looking for $1,300. Very specifically, I'm looking for $1,300. So I, you know, we want to be very specific about what our ask is because people don't know what they're saying yes to otherwise.
Right.
Now, it also helps us sort of stand in our own power when we get really specific and clear about what we want. Now, I also want to say, though, that being direct does not get us off the hook of storytelling that makes it clear why that direct ask makes sense to the thing that we're trying to make happen and why it makes sense to the person we're asking. Maybe your listeners have been to these gala kind of events where you do a paddle raise or a fund a need, where you're not actually auctioning an item, but you're just literally asking the room for direct contribution.
Right.
And people know why they're there. They're there to like give, fine. But it doesn't get me off the hook of reminding everyone why their giving matters before I make the ask. So yes, we can be direct and we must, but we also must appreciate and elevate the importance of reminding people about why that direct ask matters to them, to the mission that we're funding, to your entrepreneurial journey, maybe them saying yes to you, to maybe you're looking for a mentor inside your organization. Like, why is their investment in you a payoff for what they want to see in the world?
I've seen people do like, oh, I'm making an ask. Let's say I want to get a raise. And then they start to talk about all the things in their life that they need this raise for. The person who has the money is holding the purse string, does not care about all the things that you need in your life. So that's why you need the raise. That's You're right. exactly right that when you do the storytelling, it's directly related to how the raise will actually make their life better. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yes. You know, to be direct, yes, that's what I'm talking about. Like, why does it matter that I level up my income at this organization? Because I'm at a time where I life where I have particular financial goals and I want to stay here. I don't want to compromise my goals or have to leave in order to reach them. I've done X, Y, and Z here. This place is important to me. I know I can continue to grow my impact. And I have my own goals. And staying here helps you. Staying here and helping me reach my financial goals, I mean, you're not going to say it this way exactly, also helps the organization continue to reach its goals because I'm on board. I'm here. I want to stay.
Right. Well, and when that value is aligned, what they're paying you versus what you think you are worth, you are more likely to stay. You are more likely to show up and give everything. I mean, how many times have you worked, maybe not you specifically, but I've worked a job and I'm sure my listeners have worked a job where you feel like you're being underpaid and you don't show up in that way where you're like, I'm ready to do this. I'm all in. You're just kind of like one foot out the door a little bit because you don't feel that the exchange of value is equal.
That's right. That's right. So I love what you're pointing to, which is sort of a phrase that I'm wrestling with right now, a phrase that I frankly don't like, which is this whole idea of like, paid what you're worth, paid what you're worth. And I just want to say like, we're all worthy. Like the word worth is so loaded up for people. You know, I experience women saying, I want to get paid what I'm worth. But when it comes to asking for what they want, the idea that whatever I get a yes to defines what I'm worth actually is damaging to their courage to go out and make an ask, because that what the answer that I get to that ask defines my worth.
Interesting.
And so that's freaky.
Yeah. So instead of thinking about what you're getting is what you're worth, it's really about focusing on that exchange of value, what the job is versus what
exactly,
you're receiving.
Exactly. You know, I have auctioneering clients who say, you know, for this piece of art, we want to get X dollars. And I say, well, I'm going to sell it to whatever somebody in the room values it at. I'm going to sell it for whoever in the room thinks it's worth the most for themselves. So I say it's not get paid what you're worth. It's like recognizing more that price is a measure of value, not necessarily a measure of your worth. You know, I've been an independent professional for years and I send quotes out to clients all the time. They say, no, thank you. And I'll find out it's because of price. I'm not going to lower my price unless I want to, but because that to me, that is often a signal that what they value and what I value are not aligned. And so it is a danger zone. At the same time, you don't know what people value until you ask. There has to be a willingness to experiment and see where the ceilings are, because we could be making decisions about what other people will or won't pay for. It isn't based at all on what they will or won't pay for. It's based on your own assumptions about what something is valued at in the market. Particularly when you're not dealing with something like a salary band inside of an organization, but you're dealing with something out in the open public market, like, you know, creative services. So there can be a little bit of a willingness to go like, okay, great. So you've been getting yeses to your quotes as a writer for $125 an hour for the last 18 months. What happens if you boost it to 175?
Well, this is where we can really pinpoint the fear in women. We are all afraid if I go higher, the answer will be no entirely. that it won't be, no, I won't give you 175, I'll give you 150, but it'll be, you know what, I'll go somewhere else. And I think we live in such a state of fear that somebody's just going to take that business or take that, whatever that opportunity is, and go elsewhere if we don't lower it and make them comfortable. Yes. So how do we fight that, Dia?
So this is kind of cray cray in that, like, I'm actually going to tell you, you got to be willing to walk away. Number one, that's one big deal, and have the answer to the question. If they say no, what are you going to do? People ask me all the time, if they say no, what do I do? And I'm like, I don't know. What do you want to do?
You know, I mean, chase them down?
Sure. You can go back and say, hey, I'd like to renegotiate. I really want to do this work. Or you, if it's about price, what, I don't even do that at first. If I get a no, I ask, can you help me understand what, like, where that's coming from? Sometimes it's about budget. Sometimes it's not at all about budget. It's about cultural alignment. Sometimes it's about, like, I'm just way too much for them or not enough for them or what. And I mean, I don't mean in terms of price. I mean, in terms of self.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Being extra.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I just got a no for a big proposal I wrote, and I'm like, I had almost a sense of relief because I was like, oh, guys, good for you, because you can't, you're not ready for this.
I dodged a bullet ready on for that me. One.
I have no idea how I'm going to backfill that potential income, but I'm sure it'll work out. So the question is, like, how do you deal with that? So one of the concepts that I've drawn into my Ask Like an Auctioneer conversation is this notion that your market, ladies, is bigger than the room. Your market is bigger than that no you got. There is a yes around the corner. You just can't see it yet. From somebody else, from somebody different, from somebody who gets it. The question is, are you willing to say, I'm still going to try 175 to a different audience and see what happens? You know?
Right.
Like,
right.
Your audience is bigger than the room. So in my context in auctioneering, that's not true. I got 300 people in the room. That's my market. Boom. Okay. Fine. But if I don't meet my reserve, my reserve meaning I'm going to sell this piece of art to this audience, and if we can't get a price for $3,000 or more, then we pull it off the floor and we don't sell it. So for you, in some cases, if you quote $175 for my writing and they say, give you a cold no and go dark on you, the question is your reserve really 125? So you want to go back to them and go, hey, I'm really interested in this project. I'm willing to negotiate if price is a blocker for you. But you know that 125 is your baseline, is your reserve. Okay. So in my case, we might pull it off the floor because we can't get to the 3,000. But guess what? We're going to save that piece of art. And guess what we're going to do? We're going to sell it online. We're going to put it back in the mix next year when we have a different profile, 300 people in the room. Because that market is different now. Your market is bigger than that room, is bigger than that conversation, it's bigger than that one pitch. That requires an abundance mindset, which is scary and very important, because if you hold on to that, you won't say yes when you mean no. You won't say yes if you mean no.
Right. How many times have we said yes to a client because of the money or because we feel like something else is not going to show up if we don't say yes. Now, I know the abundance mindset. I'll be honest with you. I work on it regularly because
me too.
We slip. But I would love to hear in your words how you see the abundance mindset and how you actually work on it personally yourself.
Well, I have this weird fortune of having been self-employed since I was like 12. So I recognize that for women who are stepping out on their own after being in house for a full career, this can feel like a real black box. And, you know, because I've been self-employed since the very beginning, whether it was stealing rocks from my neighbor's front driveway and then selling it to them for a nickel a piece, all the way up to doing what I'm doing now, writing proposals for, you know, workshops and putting products out in the world and doing my hobby gig, blah, blah, blah. It is odd that a lot of the time, when something doesn't work out, something else will fill it. And there's a certain level of trust I have in that inherently. And it's trust and it's belief also. And I don't think it's mysterious to me, but I don't think it's naive because it's happened over and over again. Now, given that, I will also recognize that there are some moments. And for you who are listening, there may be moments where you go out in the world and you start at a place that feels like you can get a yes. You're going to start at a rate that gives you a yes to start to build your confidence. And then pretty soon you're going to be experimenting with raising your rates. And what I want us to all do is to challenge what we think we can get. to challenge that assumption and experiment with that in increments as we go forward, and let that prove to you where the levels are that you want to play when we go out into the world and we ask for 175 an hour, but we know our reserve is 125, but they won't even meet that. And we have the courage to walk away from it, knowing that around the corner, there's something else. We just can't see it yet. Like start to experiment with that. So you start to trust it. You know, I'm not asking anybody ever to jump off a building without a parachute. We need to be safe so that we can be grounded, but we need to also make sure that we're challenging what we think we can get in the market over and over again, because our own assumptions hold us back.
Absolutely. I mean, the assumption sometimes if we're going through something like say you've been, you know, you're going out into the world and you're leaving a job and you assume that people don't have the money to pay you what you believe is worth for that job, you know, and so we start to lower it and you're projecting your own fears onto other people and you're blocking yourself.
Totally. In auctioneering, I can't. So what I love about asking and trusting that, like, you can make a big ask and then you can increment down until you stay still above your reserve. Or if you can't, you're going to walk away. Like, you have space in there. A no often doesn't fully kill a conversation. You know, it can, but it doesn't always. In auctioneering, I'm externalizing constantly an ask, right? Like, I'm saying $42. No, not 42. How about 41? Not 41. How about 39? Oh, 39. You're in at 39. Anybody in at 40? Like, I'm just following my curiosity to see where everyone is until I could be negotiating down to a penny difference. But we're externalizing it, which means I'm not making a decision for the room about what they'll pay for something or not.
Right.
I'm putting an ask out there and then seeing.
Right.
So for us to be willing to go, I don't know, let's see, is a powerful sort of perspective to be in when we're thinking about experimenting with pushing not just our consulting rates, but maybe you're going out for a new job and you're looking for a salary stretch or more equity in the company that you're in, or you want to renegotiate something with your existing employer, or you're going to write that proposal of a lifetime, or you're going to start, you know, you're launching a new company and you need to recruit your board of directors, whatever.
And I also noticed that sometimes women will really look at it as an exchange of money for time and not an exchange of money for their expertise. So if you've been working in marketing for 20 years for a company and now you're out on your own, you don't go for that hourly salary you were making before because you have this 20 years of experience.
This goes back to that idea I mentioned earlier that, like, so many of the folks that I work with underestimate what their offer is inside of their ask. So, yeah. If I'm buying your time, I'm not actually buying your time. I'm buying your blood, sweat, and tears for the last 20 years.
Right. Exactly. And I think that we need to be confident in that and what our experience is and what we have to offer now, and not just look at it as an hourly rate.
So I'm going to actually offer something a little different, which is to say, I don't actually give a shit if you're confident or not. Because confidence comes from action. What I care about is, are you willing to take an action, make an ask, challenge yourself a little bit in a new way? And then once you go out and make that ask and see what happens, you're going to get confidence from it. We're challenged right now because we're in this confidence trap where we're selling all the time that you need to be confident in order to. I need the confidence too. When instead I think about you need it, confidence is an outcome, not a condition.
I want you to say that like, yes. Yes and yes. So can you just like slow it down and just say that again?
Okay. So we're in a confidence trap right now where somehow the narrative around doing things that stretch us, we've talked ourselves into believing that we need confidence in order to do it. When what I've seen over and over again is that you don't need confidence to do it. Confidence is an outcome of doing it.
100%.
When I talk to women, they say, I need to feel better about making this ask. And I'm like, nope, make it while you feel freaked out and then see what happens. Because if we expect ourselves to feel a certain way in order to do a certain thing, we'll never do the damn thing.
Yes.
I want to invite you and your listeners, as I invite myself every day, because this stuff's not easy for me either. I'm doing it. It's a practice. I want to invite women into their zone of freaking out. I want them to get familiar with it and go, oh, this is what my zone of freaking out tells me when I'm in the zone of like maximum potential for what I'm trying to do, you know, get familiar with it and not try to kill it. not try to expect yourself to be perfectly confident in order to go out and make the asks that matter to your business and career. Like, confidence is an outcome. Be freaking out while you do it. I have a 9-year-old and, you know, she says, you know, she struggles asking her teacher for things because she doesn't want to break the rules and all those gendery things, all those, you know, gender coded things are showing up. She says, "Mom, I'm scared." And I'm like, this is what I say all the time to her. I say, like, okay, you can go ahead and ask for what you need while you're scared. It's never, don't be scared. It's never like, no reason to be scared. Bullshit. It's scary. Fine. I'm like, go ahead and do it while you're scared.
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh. You're my spirit animal. And the thing is, you started this conversation talking about being afraid, doing things anyway, asking for what you want, not, you know, just all of these. It's amazing. Like, I would never have thought, hey, I'll have an auctioneer on the show and she'll teach us how we can live our lives more boldly by being an auctioneer. Like, I love what you're doing because not only are you teaching so many people, you know, women, I focus on women, but you're teaching women and men how to really get what they want or close to what they want in life. But there are so many life lessons here. And the fact that you're using the auctioneering as a marketing tool is brilliant. I mean, that's because there are so many people out there trying to get the attention and dollars of people who want to live a better life.
It's funny that you say that because I literally don't even think of it as a marketing tool, although I have a lot of feedback that, like, oh my gosh, that's so catchy and marketable. That's so great. Because when I was falling asleep that night, you know, last year thinking about this, I literally said, wouldn't it be great if we all had a chance to ask like an auctioneer? And that, like, now it's a URL, you know, it wasn't even like, oh, that's marketing and catchy. And that's all really this is. It's a combination of my years and years working with people on trying to advance their businesses through storytelling in front of audiences and knowing that asking is a component of that, leveraging what I've learned from auctioneering and using that to supercharge women standing in front of a room or one person or on a call or in front of that one scary email that they're about to send and helping them supercharge it so that they can get more of what they want, so that they can find the courage to ask boldly, so they can put themselves in control of their own destiny as best they can, so that they can accelerate their goals, so they can have the impact they want to have in their families and in the world.
Yes. Yes. And don't wait until you feel confident, ladies.
To recognize that, yes, confidence is an outcome, not a condition. You don't have to read that freaked out feeling you get as a sign you're doing something wrong. You can read it as a sign you're onto something.
That's perfect. Thank you so much. You got me all fired up. I'm ready to go ask a lot of shit now.
I'm having so much fun doing this work. You know, I just launched this project this year. My goal is to reach 1 million women. Is if we get a million women getting more of what they want, I want that to be my legacy, that more women got what they needed to build the life and careers that they want, to have the impact they have in the world that they want.
That's amazing. So before we go, though, real quick, you know, I ask all of my guests, what does it mean to you to 40 Thrive?
It means to be unapologetic about how I want to live my life. Only saying yes to the things I really mean yes to. And it means saying no to everything I really mean maybe or no to. And to be in that place, you know, my 40s are, I've never been hotter. I've never been more clear about what matters to me. It's about living in alignment, I think.
I love it. Absolutely. Dia, thank you so much.
I had so much fun.
Thanks so much for listening. If you like this episode, please share it with a friend. You know the one. She needs a little boost right now, and this might just do the trick. Until next time, take care and keep thriving. Spring has sprung, and with the change of seasons, sometimes comes an increase in vitality. If you're feeling in the mood for a little more personal time, may I suggest Coconu? Coconu is all about providing clean and natural ingredients when you're enjoying your most intimate moments, with or without a partner. Naturally safe products developed by people who are obsessed with quality. Get 15% off with promo code GRONASS at grownasswoman.guide/coconu. That's 15% off with promo code GRONASS at grownasswoman.guide/coconu.